So I'm not going to talk for very long because we have a lot of poetry to get through, but the very first thing I want to do, and probably the most important thing, is to thank Paul so much. He is a champion for poetry in the city. He works so, so hard, and we appreciate him so much, and we love you so much. Thank you so much for giving the MA group this space here every year. It's such an important part of our, not our course, but our experience, you know, and you know how we work together, and coming into the city is a chance for you to get to know us and see what we're doing, and a chance for some of our MA students have been popping in on the Monday nights, but some of them haven't, so you'll get to know them as well. So I'm Leanne, and I'm a lecturer on the creative writing course in UCC. I teach on the poetry modules, and it is my pleasure to introduce you to our brand new crop of poets who are actually all sitting down in the back of the room. You'll have to make a path, and they're just terrific, and I've become so fond of them, and I think you will too. We have 10 poets, and I'm going to introduce them three at a time, just so you'll see me two more times. Our first poet reading tonight is Betty O'Mahony. Betty is a native of Cork City, and her poems are very much inspired by her home place. Having recently retired, she's now a full-time student at UCC. You'll hear some of her poems tonight, the ones that are set in the city, and I, for one, learned so much from Betty during, especially our one-to-one sessions when we were on Google Maps together and travelling the city. Brianna Ulrey is a writer from Kemah in Texas and holds a BA in Management Information Systems from Texas Tech University. Before moving to Cork, Bri lived in Dallas, Texas, and she's so happy to finally escape the heat and be here in Ireland. I find her a fascinating creature. Anyone from Texas is just so fascinating to me. Dan Johnson is a poet from Ringwood, New Jersey. His work has appeared in journals such as A New Ulster, The Onion, River Review, and The Honest Ulsterman. So, yeah, that's our three. So Betty, Bri, and Dan are going to
The name of the first poem is Jewtown. The last time I went there, it was summer. I was drawn back to the small red brick house where my grandmother used to tell me about her listening to the Yiddish murmurings on a gentle cushion of wind. I can still taste the sour emissions from the gasworks and recall the factories beckoning to the workers from the tree-lined avenue of the marina, where the ships raising anchor at the docks would blast their intentions through funneled horns to the citizens of the city still wrapped in sleep. These comforting thoughts transport me back to Jewtown, the forgotten refuge in a city that was a salvation for another generation of the lost. The second poem is about a painting by John Singer Sargent. It's called Carnation Lily Rose, and I love this painting. Stretch out your hand to touch the beauty of the sweetly lit lanterns in the dusk of the evening, from 2 short minutes in twilight, capturing the colours and magical gleams of the carnation lily rose, as they shimmer in their innocence and white in John Singer Sargent's masterpiece In Light, a plein air painting of children in a dreamland, lighting lanterns in the moment before dark, the very instant before the stars come out, before the vision fades like a sweetly sounding palm. Thank you.
Alabama, Texas, twang for y'all, but we got one y'all out. There we go. So the first one's called Phases of the Moon. I am a lover who visits in the shadow of the moon, tickling your thighs with errant strands of my hair, setting aflame the fires of Tartarus with a single touch baited for with heaving breaths. By morning, the fires in the stove smolder out, and I'm left to tend to them on my own, piling peat outside the back door to make it easier for me to carry inside and break apart the bomb. I cook the supper of that day's hunt over the crackling twigs burning on the forest floor, toasting my swollen feet, singing songs to carry on the night until the moon rises above me and I lift my chin to howl at it with the wolves. Being a clarinet player, which I did for 8 years, and then I haven't played for 7 years, so it's been interesting to write about it, but I was very much, I thought I was the greatest, so evidently I was not. This is testing your reed, the clarinet player. You pick a reed, any reed, new, old, chipped if it's a favorite. You place it against the mouthpiece, lining up the curve of the reed to the curve of the black wood, letting the shadow hover above and behind the reed like the climax of a solar eclipse. At a desired spot, you tighten the ligature with one hand while holding the reed in place with the other, twisting the ligature's knobs until the reed no longer needs you to keep it there. There's a normal set of notes to play to test your reed, but you don't do that. You have your own ritual. On paper, it is simple, G, D, B, F sharp, G. In the bustle of the practice hall, it is a calling card, trilling your way from F sharp to G to make sure you're heard above the trumpets. G, D, B, F sharp, G. My last poem, this goes out to Betty. It's about cats. And Betty and I both love cats, so here we go. Reincarnation. So this is how it ends. They will find me in my bed, half eaten by cats. Reborn at Hemingway's house in Key West, nibbling on extra toes. Living in the pits of Rome with the mangled, sunbathing on Corinthian columns. Stare at the night sky and find me lounging on the moon. A shooting star will erupt and I fall with it. Thank you.
Hello everyone.
Hey.
I've got two for you. This is about a lake in upstate New York. It's called These Little Things. She is wading in the reeds in the shallows of King's Flow. Lake water is spread out smooth like a dark mirror. The water licks her ankles. She massages her toes into the sand. The silt is silk soft and fine. The sediment is black in places. She might have thought it all ash. She remembers another time. At the ocean, a different kind of sand, her father's voice. She found little crabs just beneath the surface. She cracked their shells, amazed at how the pressure of her little toe could splinter their defenses, these little things. She broke as many as she could and loved the feeling. She pushes down into the lake bed, black silt, nothing solid, no sand crabs. She walks up the hill to the cabin, steps through the door, notices blood. There's a black worm and blood between her toes. This one is about walking home. Tonight I disbelieve in clocks. Everything has a tempo. Not clocked, but a signature. The rain on the window pane, the wind steady and gone on a beat I haven't caught up to yet. But tonight I sense them. Sky colored navy, but bright. When moon and wink of morning backlight air through thinning clouds. Yes, this is a pulse too. Color of moonbeam and stirring sun. Hum of light waves going under. Creak of bedsprings on fire. Boot heels on the footpath. Simple quarter notes drumming on. We keep time between birdsong, not vicious crow nor petty gull, but warbling hiders in trees or resters on eaves of blue-eyed houses. I neither know what time it is, nor do I care. Time is not rhythm. Tonight, I disbelieve in clocks. I am walking home with you.
Poets. Franny O'Toole is an accomplished writer from Chicago, Illinois. She came to us via Yale University, and her work, which is inspired by the American experience, has certainly enlightened me as a reader, and I think you'll also enjoy her unique voice here this evening. Deborah Fotheringham is an American writer and singer-songwriter from Utah. As a songwriter, Deborah has released 3 albums of original folk roots music. Her music has been featured on American television, including CBS, PBS, and AMC. She is also a featured vocalist on 3 albums from EDM megastar Cascada, am I saying that correctly? Cascada, including his Grammy-nominated album, Atmosphere. And following Deborah, we have Margaret O'Driscoll, who is a traveling grandmother and lives in Cove in County Cork. She writes poetry, essays, and memoir, and she's currently working towards her first collection. She's a member of Middleton Writers Group and of Cork Words. So first we'll go with Franny, and then Deborah, and then Margaret. Thank you, and thanks everyone for coming. My first poem is called Adults Not Getting Along, circa 2004. The hoses stood for opposing snakes in the grass. On our side, blades were split from where the forked tongue flamed the ground. The yard in 2004 was wild to me, tempting in the front, though I spent more time in the back, where neighbors couldn't watch me play pretend or perform pretend play, because even then I knew that the invisible do not come where you can see them, but are, rather, the electricity of upstairs rooms. Martha's real name I do not know. My mother coined the nickname after the celebrity who was so infamously clever, so stern toward the beauty she stuffed in the gloves of the investment trader, trader of outside from in, inside out inmate. The prison impossible for us to color in our minds. Orange, ironed, and white evening hours, while older neighbor Martha puts clove in a roast. We wouldn't know this kitchen, just its facades. House done up for holidays by hired elves who tiptoe from their trucks at night, slinging smiles on its face. Mom says Martha is rich and divorced for no one knows why. Her lawn is so studded a bosom for one son to come home to. His suitcase stubborn like a toddler yanked up the cobblestone, over which lights yarn overhead like the love that contemporarily knit a person in place. The crib, the fence, these silent pickets on our living room blinds. And then my last one is called During the Beijing Olympics. Circa summer 2008. Breakfast of champions, then our fourth day at the pool. Quick feet gather at the edge. We are floppy and wet like our feet. We are muscles slapping around from our feet, fish-like when Phelps's muscles jiggle with each slap. My grandmother on the deck skips the people spread about Phelps smoking weed. She turns the page while us kids are boom off to the races. Splash, splash, cool blue chemical bath. The water parts like a proud, grinning grandmother. How right we are with our eyes on the prize. Eyes, vessels, blood vessels in our eyes.
Be published in the forthcoming Cork Words. The Siren. In Utah, the light through the window slats, it sings so steady. It pulses with no accent, with no rests, with no crescendo, and the shadows move across the gray wall like a metronome, over the guitars, over framed albums hung in the same spots. The paint has faded. In Cork, the light is always shifting, a demonstration of dynamics, gliding from breathy to belting, sliding from pianissimo to fortissimo, an aria performed through a pop filter of clouds playing over my thighs. I came here to tune out the siren that sings of safety and steadiness and startle my heart with these sudden movements, these shimmering melodies through the glass. Steady. Last spring, the western tanagers arrived in the trees lining the path by the lakeshore. At first, only one, a brief flash of scarlet and gold amid the new green. Then another, and another, until the cottonwoods were singing with tanagers, gemstones flashing in the canopy. The tanagers stayed for a week, and every day, sometimes twice a day, I left my home and walked along the path through the woods just to see them. And in all that time, I never noticed or looked for the steady robin with his ruddy breast and dull brown coat, my companion through every season. I'll do one last one. This one might need a little context. I was raised Mormon. I'm not anymore. But as part of, to be a temple-going Mormon, you have to commit to the word of wisdom, which means no drugs, no alcohol, no tea, no coffee. A Mormon mission. I can't believe the lengths that coffee drinkers will go to get their fix, she had said. In the spring chill and stillness of a red desert day, the station wagon's tires crunched through loose gravel as we pulled into gas station number 2 in as many miles. As my sister shifted into park, she complained aloud at the audacity of the previous outpost to carry only Diet Coke. She drank exclusively Coke Zero. I sat warmly in the passenger seat, a burrowing owl buried snugly in an oversized down coat, while she faced the cold and crossed the asphalt to carry out her beverage hunt. Earlier that morning, as we prepared to break camp in the wan honeyed light peeking over Escalante plateaus, I had scrubbed the wet grinds from my French press, the lingering coffee heat, kissing fingers bitten into white by wolf cold.
Hi everyone, I'll read you two poems. The first one is called On the 23rd of October 2019. On a day when the sun owned the sky, a firecracker cartwheeling across house and garden, purple budgie and delicate kaffir lilies swaying to the jitterbug of ladybirds and honeybees. Dancing windows and laundry joined in this swan song for a season on the wane. A red admiral distilled out of the air, and a wrecked wind fluttered inside my room. Landed on window ledge, desk, light shade, wing beats a jabber on the foreign veneer. Migrant attracted by the promise of warmth, seeking survival for the winter ahead. That afternoon, a lorry discharged off a ferry growled to a halt at Tilbury Docks. Red cab and mammoth white box, shuttling weekly cargo between Bulgaria and Britain. A kaleidoscope of white butterflies disgorged, soared to the Great Spirit, conveying final wishes. Migrants of Vietnam journeying ever closer, 39 families dizzy around a bale fire of grief. And I wrote this poem for my grandson, Nisha. Nisha is 11, and he's showing me how to read the world through his lens of autism. Different is a colour. Some days my yellow boots walk me to school. Other days, School squishes my head in red. Today, white clouds roll their film across the sky. A thaumatrope, two images just like me. I touch your watch, it's radioactive. My antennae rotate with the surge that overwhelms. I wear black earmuffs, a shell for my ears. Listen, a scrambled rainbow is my brain. Brown ants understand, I am not a nerd. Look, yellow boots are following me home. Thank you.
Left and I'll introduce them all. So Naila Galen is the poet mother of three children who are all adults now and able to look after themselves just well enough to let her come to Cork to write her novel. She spends her days spouting random words into the heavens with the hopes that they will come together and fall back down to touch her on her head. And they do. After Naila, we have Pat Agnew, who's originally from Dublin and spent many years working overseas as part of his career as a computer programmer. He returned to Ireland in 2017 and settled in Lismore, County Waterford. Pat has always had an interest in poetry and finally has the opportunity to give his all and give all of his time to it. After Pat, we have Peggy McCarthy. She lives in Waterford City and it's a city which inspires a lot of her work. Her poems are also grounded in the richness of the Irish countryside, and I think you'll hear some of that richness and imagination here tonight. And last but not least, we'll have Robin Creamer, who's from Douglas, not too far away. She studied Arts International for her undergraduate degree at UCC, majoring in English and German. And although she's primarily a writer of fiction, the MA has encouraged her to dabble in poetry, Irish folklore and mythology, non-romantic relationships between women and themes of feminism are among her main writing interests. Okay, so we have Naila.
Thank you. So a little context for my first poem, Dream of Dreams. I wrote this poem to give voice to an historical figure, Madam C.J. Walker, who was a black female entrepreneur born in 1867 in America, during a time when black female and entrepreneur didn't really go together. And she started her company making and selling hair care products after having a condition where most of her hair fell out. And she was really unbelievably successful, and not just in the US, throughout the US, but Latin America and the Caribbean. At her peak, she had 20,000 employees, and her dream was to build a house in the most exclusive neighborhood in America, which she did. And when the neighbors saw her, they thought she was the help, and she let them know, no, this is mine, I own this. So, dream of dreams. Ma and Pa were slaves. I was born free. They left the cotton field and this earth when I was 7. And the cotton field clutched me to its bosom, tight like love, thick devotion, painful comfort. I was Breed Love, and then McWilliams, and then Davis, and then I was Madam C.J. Walker. I was a cotton picker, and then a washerwoman, and then a cook. And then I was Madam C.J. Walker, first self-made woman millionaire, woman and black. Nobody ever told me I was beautiful, so I told myself. I tell you, you are beautiful. My hair fell out, and the African came to me in sleep. I made the wonderful hair grower, and my hair became beautiful and thick, like me. 3 months education, the whole of my life. I worked the whole of my life. I got myself a start by giving myself a start. I give you a start. Washerwoman, cook, cotton picker, 20,000 of you. I built a grand house in the wealthiest town in America. The Lilawara, my dream of dreams. They said I didn't belong. The washerwoman. I stayed. The businesswoman. Madam C.J. Walker. First self-made woman millionaire. Woman and black. My final piece is entitled David. I asked you to send me Goliath, but you sent me David instead. Oh, Heavenly Father, upon my knees I prayed most fervently, then added up my good works, counted them twice, then two times more, and found them sufficient for my request. For Goliath, strong and sure, so tall I would have to stand on tippy toes to touch my lips to his, with shoulders broad enough to bear the weight of me and all my burdens. Goliath. This I prayed, and when I opened my eyes, there he was, David. I did not know him. I did not want him, but I could not turn away from the gentlest eyes staring at me, from the gentlest voice speaking to me, from the gentlest touch caressing my cheek. David, asking only that I might take leave of my prayer long enough to look at him, to see him. David. He whispers, and I hear him as if his voice is magnified 1,000 times. I hear him somewhere deep inside. That is where I meet him, deep inside. He knows the way to my special place. I never told him the way, but one day he was there, waiting for me. David. He makes love to me like an eagle soars, where the air is thin and every breath is life, where the view is of the horizon and all that lies beyond it. He saw me. I could not hide. He was sure I would come to him, and I did. I do, every time. I want to feel the wind upon my face, to feel the freedom of letting go, of falling into him. He is waiting for me. David. I want to see the sunshine breaking through the clouds every time he smiles, rainbows dancing in his eyes. I want to be warmed by a soul on fire, his soul on fire. David. David. Do I recall that Goliath fell to him, much as I feel my heart now falls to him? David. My God, I asked you to send me Goliath, but you sent me David instead.
Thank you. I'm going to read two poems. The first poem is a short poem about homelessness and the tragedies that can lead to, and how I bore witness to a very small piece of one story. And it's called Witness. All that remains is an open-backed white council van. Two embarrassed lads tenderly lifting a ripped tent. The sides shining damp in October sun, awkwardly tipping it over the side, a sleeping bag dangling through torn cloth, like a banner, left to wave at the passerby, who either turns away or winces as it comes to rest. The second poem is about the art of smoking a pipe and how I observed it as a young boy and how I would do it if I ever do. It's called Lighting Up. He loved the straight handle, the short stem bound to a perfect hollow, the inlaid maple wood soft on the eye, smooth and cool, varnished, familiar. He loved to touch the plain surface before the warm pleasure was struck. To tap the pipe in his hands, easy slaps gathering old cinders to fling deep in fire. To scratch the pot's impatient itch with the penknife's cleansing blade. To part the stem and the bowl, to run the chenille up the channel, to begin the meticulous to and fro, the push and pull to remove residue, to bring the tunnel to the eye towards light. He loved the cut slabs of tobacco, sweet, moist and dark, like girl cake crumbling, rubbed and rolled between the pans, roly, roly, round and round, recited again and again, filling the bowl with the shaved flakes, savouring a brief pause before the match sparks, the amber glow sucked to life, cupped in his hands, inviting the rise of the haze to move closer. Thank you.
Gillamine. It's in Tramore, County Waterford. It's a swimming cove where I swim regularly.
Jerry's mother.
Gillamine. A shaken out quilt of ocean billows towards me and rolls on to the frothy purple seaweed, holding firm to the rocks even in the drag of winter. It's late autumn, and here in this cove, the east wind can peel the edge of midday light to a bone depth of skin as temperatures plummet. I've known this cove for over 20 years, watching her shifting moods, from balmy to boisterous, tranquil to thunderous, her steady heart pulsing the tides of every season. Today, my chin on the water, I unfold octopus-like beneath the surface, taste her turbulence on my salty lips, and slide into her swells, my homemade strokes taking me to the orange buoy and back. On days like this, the sunlight beaming towards me across the water like a new Grange dawn, a surprising and elusive brightness searches me out, filtering through to shadowy places. I turn and catch lungfuls of cold, crisp air that fill me up and strike for the sanctuary of cold concrete and towels, dripping a skinful of flotsam as I go. The second poem is called The Well. We lean in low, with secrets to tell, to the still cold water and the briary stone. Haul up the bucket from the darkened well. Cast down to a place below the swell of sodden clay and waters unknown. We lean in low with our secrets to tell. Was it here we threw coins to dispel the lurk of dark shadow that lodged moons ago? Heave up the bucket from the gaping well. Silent ripples that flatline and circle, outreaching the touch of time and bone. We lean in low with our secrets to tell. Our childlike wishes and prayers that impel the water to hold us and endlessly flow. Hoist up the bucket from the sunless well. Searching now to reclaim and retell our story run dry and long overgrown. We lean in low with secrets to tell. Haul up the bucket from the darkened well.
Vulnerable.
So much depends upon how far you choose to sit from the glossy wooden coffin with the cadaver in sight. Poked and prodded like a reptilian specimen, the wrinkles filled out, blemishes painted over, revised like a wax model in two souls. How can a body look so little as they did when spirit breathed life inside them? Everything is freezing. Your hands, the funeral home, the church, they are freezing too, when you touch the cool marble of what is now a carapace. And the next one is written in the voice of Wendy from Japan. It's called The Boy Who Never Grew Up. He came in through the bay window last night, while the rest of London was sleeping, his boyish grin dripping in moonlight and pixie dust trailing from battered slippers. He waltzed me across each corner of the nursery, our feet never touching the ground, as he recalled tales of peril and hijinks from Neverland, then produced a tiger lily for our anniversary. It would disintegrate within the hour. He never stayed for too long these days. Shadow was restless. I could not pin him down with all my efforts. He said it was just a phase. He itched to return to the chaos of the island, and Peter, he had not aged a day in 4 years. I was taller now, towering over him when he asked me to join his adventures in the sky. He craved female companionship and told me that growing up was hard to do. The route to freedom was simple. Second star to the right and straight on till morning. His ego was bruised when I did not give him the answer he wanted, but he kissed me anyway. And as soon as both hands on the clock struck 12, he bolted. Back the way he came, through the open bay window, shreds of pixie dust still clinging to the carpet. And the kiss he left on my forehead, thrumming with the weight of 24 lost boys crying for their mothers.
So that's all from us. Thank you to our MA crew and all of your hard work. And again, thank you so much to Paul for offering us and giving us this platform. We're mad about you. And, second star to the right and straight on to Sarah Berkeley, I think, after the first.